So in Acts chapter 20 is where this story is found. In Acts chapter 20. So in Acts chapter 20, beginning at verse 7, now the Apostle Paul and those with him are at Troas. And it says in verse 7 of Acts chapter 20, on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. I want to stop there a moment. One of our young men in his 20s said to me a few weeks ago, he had attended a conference here in town that were saying, you know, how much they believed that we should still worship on Saturdays. And this was one of those references in the New Testament that spoke to his heart, you know, and other places where the early church did things on the first day of the week on Sunday as a transition into the resurrection of Christ era. And on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Paul spoke to the people, and because he intended to leave the next day, he kept on talking until midnight. Interesting. The next time I'm going to take a trip out of town, I've got biblical grounds for preaching long. There were many lamps in the upstairs room where we were meeting. In other words, it was pretty warm. Seated in a window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. That's happened to me before when I was preaching, and someone sank into a deep sleep. Someone told me the other day they actually heard the person snoring, and that's sad, but I heard that if you go to sleep in church, try not to feel too bad because it may have saved you from a heart attack. Now, I don't know how true that is medically, but if there's any truth in it, it's good. And when he was sound asleep, Eutychus fell to the ground from the third story and was picked up dead. Paul went down and threw himself on the young man and put his arms around him. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "He's alive." Then he went upstairs again and broke bread and ate. After talking until daylight, now, I could kind of feel all right about midnight, but all night till daylight? He was the Apostle Paul. That's why it was okay. The people took the young man home alive and were greatly comforted. Now, what spoke to me perhaps the most in this was that there were people who picked him up when he fell three stories and died. And it made me feel impressed tonight that that's what the Lord wants each of us to do for him, is to be available to pick people up when they have fallen down. We don't know tonight, in looking in one another's faces, how we may feel like we have fallen down and gotten hurt recently. But if you did, I have a word for you. There are people here tonight to pick you up. I may have alluded to this briefly recently, but there is one of our couples who look to this church at their age now, being near 60 years of age, who found themselves without employment and physically impaired, had paid their house down to $16,000 on the first mortgage and about $3,000 on the second mortgage, and could not make a couple of months' payments. Now, you know what that means. And one of our families, one of our couples that you wouldn't think had accumulated much money in life, but she went to that couple and she said, "I believe the Lord wants me to have you sign a promissory note contract for deed thing, and I'm going to pay off your house, And where you've been paying 600 and something a month, you pay me $233 a month for 7 years without any interest, and that'll be fine. Now, yeah, that'll make me cry. Because that's somebody picking somebody up. You know, accidents happen to good people when they're doing good things. You can be on your way to help somebody. You can be in church like Eutychus was, and something happened to you. It happened to me. I'm sitting here in Central Assembly 15, 16 years ago, about a third of the way back in the section there, and the song service has completed, and one of the board members is at the microphone to give congratulations to Pastor Wanamaker on behalf of the board for his 25 years of service. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden my eyesight starts doing this until it completely closed, and I just totally relaxed. I was unconscious. My wife looked over in a moment and thought I was just resting and tilted my chin and my head went back and I turned gray and was laid down on the pew. Brother Wanamaker, my wife said, came down from the platform and said, "Folks, it's Hubert." And they began to pray. And it was probably a couple of minutes, she said. That was the time when Sabrina, our daughter, was here in town, and she's sitting next to Glenda over there, and then Glenda, and then me. And my daughter looked over at me being laid down on the pew and got up on the back of the bench and yelled out, "Is there a doctor?" That's a sweet daughter. Anything she wants, he can have it, right? And so Dr. Mark McCorkle came over, and I think Brother Ashcroft's wife and I think Sister Sandra was right there. And the three of them were praying over me and the congregation, and they were trying to get me to come back to life. And Mark McCorkle, Glenda said to one of the nurses, "You take his mouth and I'll take his chest." I'm glad he didn't say it the other way around. And about that time, I don't know if I heard him, I don't remember hearing him, but my eyes opened. It sounds funny now, but Glenda said right after he said that, my eyes opened. And I said to Mark McCorkle, "Well, I did pass out, didn't I?" And that was embarrassing. And six men picked me up and walked out down the aisle with me. And I went to the emergency room. And they couldn't find anything wrong during that next 5 days of tests. And so we proceeded with ministry, completing it at Evangel, and moving to Kimberling City for 3 years to pastor, and then Monroe, Louisiana. We'd been there a month. And we're out in the foyer praying with a lady after church, standing there praying with her. And all of a sudden, my eyesight started closing in. And I went down on the floor, and when I got to the emergency room, they said on the monitors I was on, it happened again, and my pulse rate went down to 32 and stopped. So Dr. Kepke came in that night at the hospital and said, "Well, that's what pacemakers are made for." And so we said, "Okay, that's fine." And so I have had a pacemaker for 10 years, 8.5 years on one and 1.5 years on the second one. And I've never passed out again. And I'm very thankful for who created pacemakers. But I'm also thankful that both times it happened in church. That could have made a guy almost say, "I shouldn't go to church." But in my case, being as reckless as I am, I decided to keep going to church. No, what I really knew was God allowed it to happen where people would pray for me. Because I think the last 15 years, Glenda would have found someone else and remarried. And I'm just glad that has been me. And so it happened where people in church could pick me up. It really did. And I thank God for the people of Central Assembly and the people at Evangel Temple, Monroe, Louisiana, and people that know us when we need to be picked up. And so, you know, it can happen to you when you're doing good things. So try not to worry about it. Just realize we're in this world, Jesus said, as lambs in the midst of wolves, or whatever can happen to us that the enemy is able to use in the way of distraction or any affliction. I'm not going to blame that on the devil. I don't give him credit for any more than we have to. But these bodies are subject to affliction. These bodies are subject to weakness. And some, you know, would think, well, why don't I get healed every time I pray? Well, we are here in this physical body subject to the laws of this earth until we get a new body. We are subject to, just like Eutychus, if we fall from the third floor, we'll probably need somebody to pick us up dead, because we probably will have died. That's just the way it is. But God makes a way. And the way he chooses to work in situations like this is use others of his people to be a blessing to the one who's down. Now you can say, well, that's why God doesn't just take us right onto heaven and we escape all the suffering and affliction and everything else and we're in heaven. Well, then what opportunities would there be for the rest of us to pick up somebody when they're down? This is a family relationship. This is a loving relationship. When one another's down, the rest of us are there to pick them up. That's what I saw in that about Eutychus and those who were around him. And then, bless his heart, he must have stayed there all night till daybreak, because that's when it just closes by saying everybody took him home, and what does it say? Took him home alive and were greatly comforted. Isn't that amazing? So if any of you tonight are really down and we need to take you home alive and be really comforted, I mean, we're going to be really comforted that you don't go under, but that you go over in your situation. The Lord is with you. And I'll close with saying to you from Isaiah 41:10, I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And Ephesians 3:16, I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being. And Romans 15:1, we who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Each of us should please his neighbor for his good, to build him up. So, you know, it's not always easy for you to tell us how you need to be built up, so we'll try to be sensitive and figure it out. But we also want it to be so free among us that you will tell us when you need to be built up. Please, please, let's try to be that close, that we will tell one another when we need to be built up. Now, we don't want it to embarrass anybody or their spouse, you know, if you're down a little bit. You know what I thought when I read that? We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves, and each of us should please his neighbor for his good, to build him up. It's funny, you know, what you think of at a time like that. But I thought, my, my, if that's talking about building up my neighbor next door or where I meet them and they've been beaten and on the side of the road and I'm to be the Good Samaritan, how much more it should start at home and I should build up my wife, guys? I mean, does it speak to you like that, or is that just me? Am I weird or what? But if I'm going to treat my neighbor that good, at least I should treat my wife better. She's the closest neighbor I have. I've never quite said it like that before, because I don't just consider her a neighbor, but she's the closest person I have. And so, not to please ourselves, it says, but to please the other person, to build them up for their good. Have you enjoyed this tonight? My, what a response. Well, thank you for being understanding and considerate. And I'm sincere about this scripture. And I just thank God, you know, for his word. And somehow he would speak a little word to our heart that might apply tonight to some of us, that we would be there to pick the other one up. And you've already done that in your prayer earlier tonight when I briefly mentioned this message, what it would be like. And tonight as we close, are you here in a condition that you believe it would help you if people gathered around to pray for you and restore you in some way, physically, emotionally, financial difficulties, whatever it might be, that you've just kind of been drained out. And to exercise your faith in the Lord, that he's going to touch you now and help you by letting us know that you would appreciate prayer tonight.